In 1889, to honor the 100th anniversary of the French Revolution, the Eiffel Tower opened up in Paris. At the time, it was the tallest building in the world. But here, in America, in 1889, another towering structure was unveiled, if you will. It's the largest granite statue in this country, and it's in Plymouth, Massachusetts. It's called the Forefathers Monument. And in fact, there's a wonderful book that's been written about it by Michelle Gallagher, who will join us in just a moment. The name of her book is The Forefathers Monument Guidebook. Now, what I want to say here is that here we're talking about two different structures, both coming out in 1889. One honoring the 100th anniversary of the bloody anti-God French Revolution. The other honoring the legacy of the pilgrims who founded Plymouth and gave us such important values or emphasized such important values in their the creation of their colony, which helped cast a long and positive shadow on the future United States of America. They emphasized such things as faith, education, law, liberty, and morality. And these things are encapsulated in that beautiful statue in Plymouth, Massachusetts. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and Michelle Gallagher joins us right now to discuss, and not necessarily the contrast between the French Revolution and the Pilgrims, but rather this particular monument. But you know what? I'll tell you what, Michelle. It's great to have you back on the program. If you wanted to just make a comment about the difference in the values seen in the anti-God French Revolution versus the pro-God founding of Plymouth, Massachusetts by the Pilgrims, feel free to talk about that,
well,
if you will.
Well, it's funny too, Jerry, because until you mentioned that, that had never occurred to me, and we were talking about that. It is a remarkable contrast. What you just shared about the Eiffel Tower, and when we think about the Forefathers Monument, I kind of call it the roadmap to how America began. It's kind of this, you know, hidden monument in Plymouth, Massachusetts, which we often call America's hometown. And it was funny when we were talking about that, because although we think of the Eiffel Tower, which is named for the person who designed it, most people, if you ask them, would probably not even be aware of the Forefathers Monument, let alone know who designed it. His name was Hammett Billings. And so we were kind of struck by, you know, one monument is almost a monument to a man and a bloody event in our history. And the other is a monument to a group of pilgrims that are largely nameless, maybe except for a Governor Bradford or a couple other here and there. But it's a monument not to the man who designed it, but to the principles of the people who came, as you said, to America and established what I often refer to as faith and freedom in America. You know, when you walk up to this sweeping monument, and for those who've not seen it, I kind of refer to it as almost like our own Statue of Liberty. It's kind of a large woman, the figure Faith, pointing up to the sky, pointing to God in heaven. She's holding a Bible. She towers over the seated figures below. Faith itself, she's 36 feet tall. So she kind of towers on this huge pedestal over these four seated figures below. You mentioned the figures of morality and law and education and liberty. But if you walk up to this monument, it's pretty imposing. And what it reads on the inscription as you walk up, its formal title is the National Monument to the Forefathers, but the inscription reads, erected by a grateful people in remembrance of their labors, sacrifices, and sufferings for the cause of civil and religious liberty. Isn't that great? When you contrast what you just said about the Eiffel Tower and this monument to our pilgrim forefathers, it's a pretty stark contrast.
That is. By the way, for those familiar with Kirk Cameron, a few years ago, he made a movie about this monument.
Yes.
It's called
Yes.
Monumental. And I do want to mention this, because since I'm an employee of D. James Kennedy Ministries, now known as Coral Ridge Ministries, and I've been around for quite a while. And Dr. D. James Kennedy himself was the ultimate founder of this radio station. And on the 100th anniversary, he was the one privileged to be the one speaking at the monument, the 100th anniversary of the Forefathers Monument. And that was in 1989. So that was my first time going to Plymouth, and it was fantastic.
And what was your first reaction when you walked up to it?
Well, it was just, it was amazing. Now, when I was actually at the monument itself, already there was a large group there because of, you know, Dr. Kennedy coming to speak and so forth. And so in some ways it was almost like the crowd was overwhelming as well as the monument. But I was amazed at just seeing the replica of the Mayflower you see in the Plymouth Harbor there.
Sure.
The Mayflower 2, and in fact, mm-hmm. that's where we were privileged to do the interview with Paul Jaley. We had the ship behind him, and it was really neat. And then I got to interview a former chaplain of the U.S. Senate's son, Peter Marshall, who came from Cape Cod, a different part of Cape Cod, in order to do the interview. He co-wrote the book called The Light and the Glory.
Absolutely.
And so forth, which was kind of a classic about America's Christian roots. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to just sit down and let you wax eloquent. Tell us about the points of the statue, because your book is so beautiful. It's like a coffee table book and then some. But it's, you know, I love the pictures and the history and the feel for it. But who even came up with the idea of statue? And let's, you know, deal with one issue at a time, like morality, education.
Well, it was the brainchild of the Pilgrim Society, which was a group of, you know, largely descendants of the Pilgrims themselves. They wanted to honor their forefathers. And so they kind of began this quest to build a monument to honor their Pilgrim forefathers. And over a period of, you know, gosh, 3-4 decades, they conceived it. Hammett Billings, most people don't know his name, but he was hired to design this monument. It's his brainchild in terms of all of the symbolism, and it's a magnificent monument. But as you said, it was formally dedicated in 1889. It was a national fundraising campaign that nearly every state in the Union that was ratified at the time was a part of. I mean, they had donations that even came in from overseas. There was such a groundswell at that time of wanting to honor the historic Pilgrim forefathers and their foundational role in really what we know now as America. You know, we always talk about the Pilgrims. Most people think of the Pilgrims and the first thing they think of is, you know, Thanksgiving and the belt buckle and, you know, the turkey and all of that. And that's certainly a part of it. But when you think of the principles of freedom, the biblical self-government that enabled freedom to really take root in at Plymouth Colony, and then of course Massachusetts Bay. You know, all of the Puritans that came over. You know, we often tease that the Pilgrims were really the first church plant in America. And so the wonderful thing about the monument is that as you walk up to it, you have those five main figures, and then within each of those figures, there's smaller figures that are inscribed. There's lower reliefs, and then they've got these huge granite marble panels that depict different pivotal points of the Pilgrim story. So,
would you mind just repeating what those five statues you're talking about are?
They are. It's faith and morality and law and education and liberty, and they all go together. Those were the pillars that the Pilgrims used to establish self-government at Plymouth Colony. And we often refer to those five main pillars as the matrix of liberty, because each of those principles builds on one another. And it's the idea that we have faith in God through the God of the Bible, through Jesus Christ. And then that faith, as we understand the Bible, becomes the foundation for our morality, you know, between the Ten Commandments and, you know, the Old and New Testament. That biblical foundation for morality then informs our laws. And so our laws are to be based on biblical concepts of justice and mercy. And then that is transmitted down through the generations through education. And then that is what creates the environment for liberty. And each of these five principles are so profound, you know, and that's why when you look at the legacy of the Pilgrims, most people don't, you know, we think of them in terms of Thanksgiving, but most people don't appreciate really just the tremendous legacy that they left that really became the seeds of America. And that was what I wanted to get across in the book. And it is, as you said, it's more of a coffee table book, but it's very colorful, but it's rich with information that really shows the historic legacy of the Pilgrims. A lot of which, honestly, Jerry, I didn't know when I began researching the book. I was kind of my first reader because I didn't know a lot of this. I was shocked, you know, when I went through and kind of, I was so moved by the faith story of the Pilgrims you know, everything that they sacrificed to come to America to give their children a better life, but to practice their faith freely. You know, they, many of us know the story. You know, they left the Church of England because of religious persecution, and just everything that they went through, risking their lives. Many of them died, but it was the idea of wanting to enable their children to be able to have that freedom. And then as they came and kind of worked, we refer to it as like the saints and the strangers on the boat, you know, those who were part of the Pilgrim Church congregation and those who were not, because it was a mixture. And then as they came and landed at Plymouth Colony, and I kind of talk about, you know, how unusual, how, you know, divine providence kind of led them to Plymouth Colony because they were headed for Virginia. And so all of these kind of amazing parts of their story that lead them to a Plymouth Colony, and then they have to kind of create some sort of a self-government. And that was the fascinating thing, learning more about law, you know, from the moment that they created the Mayflower Compact. And that was a covenant that was based on their own church covenant. So they were kind of operating out of their own understanding as a church congregation in terms of, okay, how do we create a covenant whereby we will agree to abide by these rules and laws? You know, there's a lot of striking things about what they were able to do. I mean, the 1636 Pilgrim Code of Law was the first legal code produced in America. And things that we take for granted now, and, you know, we think in terms of like, oh, a Bill of Rights, due process, a trial by jury, that happened with them at Plymouth Colony. It's quite amazing. You know, the peace treaty that they were able to strike with the local natives, you know, that Pilgrim Wampanoag peace treaty lasted for over 50 years, which is stunning.
Let me interrupt you real fast. A friend of mine told me that they were in that area and they heard supposedly a National Park Service say, oh, yeah, the Pilgrims came and they stole the land from the Indians. And I thought, oh, my goodness, that's not true. It's not.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that is that, you know, remarkably, the Pilgrims created the first registry of deeds in America, and they did that to handle land transactions. Their concern was to protect the natives from exploitation. You know, what was happening was, you know, we think of the Pilgrims coming, and they did, but when we think of the Pilgrims, we think of those devout Christians who came from England for religious freedom. But on that ship and on subsequent ships, there were just people coming for, you know, opportunity. And so you had a mix of people, and so there was biblical influence. But there, you know, there were situations where the natives were being exploited. You know, people who were coming and settling, they were getting them drunk and taking advantage of them. So they set up the first registry of deeds because they were trying to protect the natives from exploitation. Deeds had to be filed with a colony official, and the native's land title was required to be fully recognized. And they did that so that they can ensure that nobody was being taken advantage of. So, of course, in the story, there is story of exploitation. But when they first got here, yeah, Chief Massasoit was, you know, giving them land. And so it was amazing to see as they kind of began to put order to their community, the things that they set in place to prevent exploitation and to promote fairness. And so there was, it's yes. Really remarkable what they were able to do.
And I understand from Paul Jaley that all the land transfers had to be approved by the Indians.
Yes. Yes. And they did that because they were trying to make sure that nobody was being taken advantage of, that there was no exploitation. And so it's remarkable what they tried to set in place to prevent some of those things that we know happened.
Okay, so we have about a minute left. Sometimes, unfortunately, Michelle, the Pilgrims and the Puritans are often presented like they're just dour and mean and harsh and, you know, they hated life. Is that true?
No, and nothing could be further from the truth. And that was one of the joys of researching this book. And I think I captured it well. They had a love for life. They had a joy. They were happy people. They were friendly people. They were hospitable. You know, Governor Bradford writes about welcoming people to Plymouth Colony, with open arms. And that was a joy that they had of kind of meeting. I mean, honestly, the whole reason they came was because they were interested in not only living in freedom, but they came because they wanted to spread the gospel. And that was their great hope, not only in evangelizing the natives, but also just the nations. That's one of the things that is on the monument when you look at it. You know, he talks about the light kindled here. But that was one of the things that Governor Bradford wrote about. You know, they cherished a great hope and an inward zeal of laying good foundations. They wanted to advance the gospel of the kingdom of Christ.
Okay, I want to have enough time to give your website. It is FMguidebook.com. Michelle, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.